Hello, this is Robert Rickover at Body Learning, and today my guest is Michael Parkinson, who's an Alexander Technique teacher in Vienna, Austria. He is also a musician. He played for many years with the orchestra of the English National Ballet in London. He's been an Alexander teacher for pretty close to 35 years maybe. And he was a guest professor of the Alexander Technique at the University for Music and Performing Arts in Graz, Austria. And in 1996, he established the Alexander Technique Teacher Training Center in Vienna, which trains Alexander Technique teachers. Michael, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Robert. Nice to talk to you.
Michael, could you begin by giving our listeners a short description of the Alexander Technique?
Well, I'm going to dip out of that question a little bit and perhaps say what my experience of the technique was, or how I came to it, which will give certainly the musicians listening some idea of what it might be for them, because what it might be for what it was for me and still is for me, and might be for them. I was 12 years old when I first started learning the bassoon, and I was a kind of a weedy kid. I wasn't particularly strong, and I had this rather hefty instrument hanging around my neck from the age of 12. And by the time I was 16, this instrument had rather got the better of me. And I remember very distinctly going for an audition to the National Youth Orchestra. And after I played, they said, well, that was quite good, and we'd like to come back next year, but in the meantime, you better take care of that left shoulder. And I got no idea what this lady was talking about. And I went to the bathroom and looked in the mirror. And sure enough, my left shoulder was about an inch higher than the other one, or probably even more than that, but it was noticeably higher. And this was something that had crept up on me without me even realizing it. I guess because I was struggling with this beast for so long, I'd adopted this rather strange body posture in order to be able to get my hands around the keys and play this thing. And it wasn't until I went to the Guildhall School of Music in London and met Betty Reiner, as she was then, better known to most of us these days as Elizabeth Langford. I had Alexander lessons. I was lucky to be able to have Alexander lessons. And the thing about the Alexander technique was that it helped me to realize what I was doing to myself, because it wasn't the bassoon that was doing something to me. It was what I was doing to myself in order to try to tame this beast, if you see what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
And the same goes for, people often say, you know, I have this back problem because it's my computer, or I'm doing this, or I drive a lot. But it's what we do to ourselves in whatever we do, even just sitting at a table, standing up, waiting for a bus. It's what we do to ourselves without realizing it that usually causes these problems. And so an Alexander Technique teacher is trying to help people come to terms with what we're doing to ourselves and help us to find a way to change that, to find a way to be able to do what we do without causing this this interference with our neuromuscular system, which is what it boils down to, really.
Mm-hmm. And just to interrupt for a second, the fact that you yourself had no idea that you were hunching one shoulder up, mm-hmm, is something that Alexander teachers see all the time. Things like that people will have distorted patterns of posture and movement that they themselves are usually unaware of. They may be aware of the unfortunate consequences of them, like pain or discomfort or whatever. So, yeah. In terms of if the technique, as you say, is about learning how to release harmful patterns like that, certainly a first step is learning what they are.
Absolutely. And the thing about it is, of course, that Alexander himself, Frederick Matthias Alexander, spent a considerable amount of time standing in front of mirrors to observe himself. And this is a painstaking process that very few of us would have the would be able to want to even embark on. But with an Alexander teacher, with somebody who with a skillful eye and a skillful hand, can bring these things to your attention relatively quickly. And of course, as Alexander himself said, the hardest things to get rid of are the things that don't exist. Now, if you don't know what you're doing, it's very hard to stop doing it. Mm-hmm. And the phenomenon we're really dealing with as Alexander teachers or as Alexander students is this question of unreliable sensory appreciation, a term that Alexander himself coined. These days, one might, a scientist or a medical practitioner might term this proprioception or faulty proprioception, mm-hmm. unreliable proprioception, this a sense of position, what exactly am I doing? Mm-hmm. And this becomes very distorted with time. If you do the same thing as I do with my shoulder over a long period of time, then it no longer comes to your attention until, as you say, it starts to hurt, or we feel tense or whatever, and the problems begin. We get perhaps numbness in the fingers.
Or in your case, someone specifically pointed it out to you and you used a mirror to check that out, looking at yourself, I'm guessing, in kind of a fresh way.
Absolutely. I had no preconceived ideas. I mean, I looked in the mirror completely in a neutral way and waiting to see perfectly level shoulders, and I, lo and behold, mm-hmm. they were very, very uneven. And of course, a couple of years later, when I finally went to the Guildhall, I was really suffering from quite serious backache and tension problems in my neck. My head sort of twitched from side to side in a very inconvenient way, because if you're trying to play the bassoon, the last thing you want is your head to be twitching from side to side. It was really quite a difficult time. But the interesting thing about my very early lessons with Betty Langford, Betty Reiner, she was, that she, I mean, plenty of people had said to me, why don't you stop doing that? You know, I mean, you look ridiculous with the sort of twitching of your head. So, of course, yes, I wanted to stop doing it, but I didn't really have a plan of action. Mm-hmm. Just to stop doing it wasn't, I mean, lots of teachers of all sorts of disciplines, also for athletics, will yell at their students and say, well, just relax, you know. Mm-hmm. But you need to have something more specific. And I remember very clearly my first Alexander lesson in Highgate Hillside Gardens. You might have even been there yourself before you trained. And Betty's saying to me, I want you to think, and this was a very important aspect of it, I want you to think of allowing your neck muscles to release so that your head can go forward and up. Now, you know, nobody would ever have said that to me. To help me to that point, nobody ever said, you know, if you want to stop twitching, you should think about releasing your neck to let your head go forward and up. I mean, that just wouldn't have happened.
Right.
But hearing those words was a mind-blowing experience in a way, because when I put that thought to those muscles, and she, with the help of her hands, of course, you know, she had her hands on my head and the back of my neck, and I knew exactly what those words meant. And it's a very funny story, because I met Betty at the Freiburg conference after not seeing her for, well, at least 20 years, possibly more. And I told her that when I left that lesson, I walked up the road and something was very odd. And I suddenly realized what it was, that I hadn't done this urge to twitch. Because this twitching was actually my way of trying to relieve tension in my neck.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But in actual fact, what I was doing, I was just creating more. I mean, sometimes people with backache, they'll kind of arch the back and pull the back in, and it changes something. So there's a temporary relief, but it doesn't go away.
Well, and it's in a way, it's kind of a rearranging of tensions.
Yeah. Sweeping the dirt from one place to the
exactly.
next.
Exactly. And yeah. You can see people often, if you watch people who are sitting, if they're habitual slumpers, every once in a while they'll kind of arch their backs and
brace themselves
up. And that does provide some very temporary relief, but they're not going to stay there. And because if they did, they would have another set of discomforts. So your experience was one where an Alexander teacher showed both, using words and her hands, guided you into a different relationship of your head to your neck and your upper torso, and kind of, I won't say attacked the shoulder problem, but helped alleviate the shoulder and the head moving issue in a somewhat indirect way, which you and probably most people would never have occurred to them to do.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's unthinkable that any other teacher of another discipline would have put it to me in those terms. Yeah.
And I think it's maybe particularly useful for musicians, instrumentalists, and singers to just to reiterate that point. That often a musician's habits might be fairly evident to other people around them, and that those people might even make suggestions of the kind you talked about, just relax or don't, you know, pull your shoulder down, or in the case of a singer, there might be some ideas about doing something with your jaw while you're singing or whatever. And usually those are the intention behind those suggestions is good, but in terms of actually producing a useful change, not all that effective.
Not at all. And not often. I mean, what my experience of teaching, well, especially singers and sometimes dancers as well, is that this whole idea of being open. I mean, every singing and dance teacher and acting teacher in the world wants their students to be what we would say about being open and wide, you know, the widening aspect of the physique. But of course, that's usually addressed by performing some kind of stretching and bracing the front of the upper chest open. But of course, all that is, again, it's sort of sweeping the dirt from one place to the next. It creates a shortening and narrowing in the upper back, which is the very place where a lot of people suffer from tension anyway. So you're just sort of pouring petrol on the fire, really. You're not addressing it at all.
Or often the instructions are make assumptions about what a person can do. Mm-hmm. You know, to tell someone just relax assumes that they actually are able to do that in a useful way to meet that particular issue. And that's an assumption that I think most Alexander teachers would agree is not one should make. It just assumes way too much.
That's right. And similarly, I don't think it would be, I think if Betty Langford had, it's Betty Langford, isn't it? Had sat on a sofa and I'd stood there in front of the chair and she'd kept saying to me, I want you to free your neck. I would have made all sorts of gestures in association with those words, but I would have gone round and round in circles. I would probably never in a million years have actually freed my neck in the sense that an Alexander Technique teacher what those words mean to us. We'd just create more tension. So it was with the help of those very, very subtle guiding hands that I was able to match the words with some kind of physical experience, for want of a better expression.
Right.
And this is one of the sort of trademark, or what, and that's not the right word, but the hallmark, if you like, of Alexander teaching is we use, not exclusively, but I mean, we use our hands in combination with or what we might call guiding orders to bring a person to help a person gain an experience of freedom, of lightness, of lessening tension. And I mean, there are the techniques and therapies and whatever that might produce the same results, but this is the way we work and it seems to be very effective. But the important thing is that eventually we pass on the responsibility to our students. I mean, we don't want our students we can't run around after them and put our hands on them while they're playing the violin in a concert. Right. Once a person has had some experience of what it's like not to tense the neck or not to tense the shoulders or whatever, If they have that experience often enough, they're able to get that themselves, if you, for want of a better expression. It's something that will come on, this responsibility is transferred.
Right.
But the biggest problem is really that, of course, not knowing we're doing it. And this is how we try to help people by pointing these things out in a quite a subtle way.
Now, these sorts of issues that we've been talking about, of course, are not just found in musicians, but it does seem as though, of all of the groups of performing artists, that musicians generally know have more of them percentage-wise have had s some have heard at least heard of the Alexander technique. And I wonder if you could say a bit about what why musicians should be particularly interested in exploring this method.
Well, I think the problem is that a musical instrument is only as good as the person in whose hands it's in. The instrument will do what it do in a way that is obedient in a sense. It does what you tell it to do, or you're in control. You have to be in control of the instrument. But if you're not in control of yourself, then there's no hope, really. You, in order to have to acquire the skills of playing a musical instrument, the intonation, the quality of the sound, the just playing the notes themselves, the technical difficulties, that's really got to come from not just from a set of agile fingers. It's got to come really from a whole organism that's well balanced, well coordinated. That is really well consciously controlled. There's no luck involved in music making, which is why I sometimes have to laugh when people say to you, "Well, good luck for the concert tonight." Well, if it's a concert outdoors and it rains, that's bad luck, I suppose. But what I actually do with my instrument is not really about luck. It's about whether I'm able to hold myself together, keep my head on, screwed on properly, and coordinate myself for the duration of that concert. And that's if I don't know really what I'm doing, if I when I walk onto that concert platform and I've already got myself in a bit of a mess unknowingly, I'm already disadvantaged. I mean, it's hard enough anyway, holding it together in a concert in a difficult situation. I mean, any kind of performance situation is hard enough.
Right.
But
One way of thinking about that is that there are really two instruments at play here. There's the violin or the piano or whatever, and then there's the person playing it, who's
that's
also a
right.
kind of an instrument. And the musical instrument is not about to change anytime soon,
No.
but the other instrument has all kinds of possibilities of changing, and that's the one that we can exercise some direction over, some c control, or as Alexander teachers like to say, conscious control over. And I think that's a thought that gets lost. As you say, a musician can become technically very good, but if they themselves are misusing their bodies as they play, and quite a few musicians do from time to time, that's going to affect the quality of the music, and it's certainly going to affect their comfort level and their ability to be a successful musician.
That's right. I mean, it's a tough job. I mean, I have to say that the sort of level I was playing at in the London scene, I was sort of I wasn't particularly high up the totem pole. But the higher you get up that into those, if you're playing with the Berlin Philharmonic or the London Symphony Orchestra, this is a huge responsibility, and you're bombarded with a lot of stimuli. You have the conductor, you have the recording engineers who want value for money. You've got an audience. You've got colleagues that you're almost at the point of being overwhelmed by these various stimuli.
If I could interject a personal note, I am not in any way a musician, but for reasons that are partly accidental. Many, many of my students are. And when I first started teaching, right after I became an Alexander teacher, I was living in Toronto, and a lot of my students were students at the university or the Royal Conservatory, which is right near where I lived. And I was astonished when I started working with them, what kind of schedules they had, how many hours a day they were practicing. Mm-hmm. And it really seemed to me that that they had taken up what struck me as one of the most challenging physical professions around. I always used to think, well, athletes, you know, professional athletes, that's pretty high level of using your body as part of your work. But I would say that musicians, it's at least as demanding in somewhat different ways. Mm-hmm. So constant same motions over and over again, the long the dreadful schedules that professional musicians had. I remember one of my early students played in an orchestra for a musical in Toronto, and I mean, when she told me what it, you know, the matinees on the weekend, sitting in the pit for like 3 hours. I mean, I just found that staggering. I had no idea that musicians work that hard and put so many demands on themselves. So maybe that's one reason why musicians do tend to gravitate towards the technique a bit more than other performers. We're coming a bit towards the end of the conversation, and I wonder if there's anything that you'd like to mention that we haven't touched on.
Well, I think one thing is, of course, then people are asking the question, how can I get to the Alexander technique? And mm-hmm. I'm always surprised when I, in Vienna, I teach a group of American students who are on exchange here, and every time they come to Vienna at the beginning of each semester, the new group comes in, and I say, just as a matter of interest, how many of you have either heard of or had the opportunity to come in contact with the Alexander technique? And since 5 years ago, I started doing this. At the beginning, 5 years ago, almost nobody had even heard of the Alexander technique. And I'm very pleased to say that certainly this last year, that all out of a group of, say, 50 students, probably 40 have at least had one, albeit briefing, encounter in a group workshop or something. So I think if you, whether you've got a problem or not, because, you know, you wonder, you might, you can't, you know, we're not, nobody's immune from the wear and tear of being a musician. If you have the opportunity to take a class or, better still, individual lessons, then, you know, get your name on the list, sign up for it, and just see what it's about. Because I think it's sometimes, you know, when there's a class available, there's lots of things on offer, and you might not realize that this could be something that could really help you. And especially if you are having difficulties, just go online, find out if there's an Alexander teacher, first of all, in your school or if in your town, mm-hmm. and go to these various websites and mm-hmm. see what's on offer, because I think there's a lot to be gain from it. As you said, Robert, music making, orchestral playing is a tough business. It's you need to look at, you need to be fit, and fit in the sense of well coordinated. Not, you don't have to be physically strong, or you don't have to be a marathon runner, but you need to know how to sit there and churn out those notes, like you say, matinee, evening, touring, and all the rest of it. Right. It's a tough life.
It is a tough life. Well, I totally agree with your sentiments about checking out what's available to you. What we're going to do, what I'm going to do is put next to the interview a link to a website that will enable you to find a teacher anywhere in the world. And we'll also put a link to your website. So mm-hmm. anyone who happens to be in Vienna, Austria, they can contact you, I assume, for lessons or classes.
They can indeed. And they can visit the training.
They can visit your training course and see how Alexander teachers are produced. It's a pretty intense process. Usually about 3 years in length, pretty several hours a day for that period. So I think this might be a good place to bring the conversation to a close. My guest today has been Michael Parkinson, who is a bassoonist and has played for many years in the orchestra of the English National Ballet in London. He also has trained as an Alexander teacher and has been a teacher for longer than me, and I've been one for 30 years. So I'm guessing it must be about 35 to 40 years.
Well, I finished in 1979.
Okay, so okay. About 32, 33 years.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
And he lives and works primarily in Vienna, Austria. He's also he established the Alexander Technique Teacher Training Center in Vienna, and he plays at festivals in Europe and other, mainly Europe, I guess. And we'll, as I say, we'll put a link to his site and a site that will enable you to find out pretty much anything you want to know about the Alexander Technique, including how to find a teacher in your area. Michael, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you too, Robert. Nice.